Welcome to CanTalk 2.0, a podcast by the Goethe Institute Cyprus on the occasion of 300 years since the birth of Immanuel Kant. I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou, academic philosopher and the host of this podcast, and in the company of Hambis Damianou, stand-up comedian, we will be looking at Kant's work in today's context. Kant's work is considered to be the pinnacle of the philosophy of the Enlightenment. In each episode, we are joined by international guest experts on Kant to ask them what Kant would think about specific situations and examples from today, from artificial intelligence to lying on dating apps. What is it like to look at his ideas from almost 300 years ago through the lens of today? Can we still learn from him? Is he still relevant? In today's episode, World Citizens Unite, we will be talking about Kant's political philosophy, and we will listen to the expert opinion of Dr. Cristobal Garibay-Peterson, who is a fellow in European philosophy in the European Institute at London School of Economics. Hi, Hambis. How have you been?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, fine.
So, I have to admit, today's topic is one of the toughest ones. As Cypriots, when the discussion comes to migration, national borders and asylum, we have first-hand experience because many Cypriots were forcibly displaced to other parts of the island, UK, Australia, Greece, etc., seeking for a better future, of course. So we live in a burning world where there are 120 million forcibly displaced people. Especially in Europe, there are increasing flows of refugees from Africa and the Middle East. And that's a reality we have to live with, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, instead of finding harmoniously ways to live together, we see an increase in racism. I know Kant lived 300 years ago, but what does he have to say about this?
Well, migration and border control and cohabitation of different people is indeed a burning issue today. And the rise of right-wing politics and populism is connected to increased migration flows. And indeed here in Cyprus, as is the case in all Mediterranean countries and in the rest of Europe, we have experienced an increase in migration flows from war-torn and impoverished Africa as well as from the Middle East. But before talking about Kant's approach to migration and border control and international relations, I think we must first critically assess the issue of racism and ask whether Kant himself was a racist.
Okay.
Yeah, that is whether and to which extent he held racist convictions. And if yes, wouldn't that be an obstacle in consulting his ideas about migration and border controls and other such matters of political nature? Mm-hmm. I had asked Dr. Garibay-Peterson about it, and this is what he had to say.
I would answer, in short, that yes, Kant was a racist. Across his writings, there are ignorant, bigoted remarks against non-white people, targeting especially indigenous American and black people. And this raises quite a complicated problem. Kant is often thought of as a radical egalitarian thinker who advances a universalist vision of morality. Think here of the categorical imperative as an example. Yet, that supposed universalism is fundamentally threatened if it fails to accommodate the dignity of all of humanity. So how should we think this through? Should we dismiss Kant's racism as merely a matter of personal bigotry? Should we see that racism as inexorably and systematically embedded in that philosophy? Should we simply abandon Kant? While these are difficult questions, I think that there are productive ways to engage with them. Because of the role that race, racial hierarchy, and outright racism play in Kant's works, and not just the early ones, I think it is a mistake to simply dismiss that racism as a matter of personal bigotry. Kant's unacceptable psychological disposition towards non-white people, in other words, cannot be simply subtracted from his philosophy. But then, the question of the extent to which that racism is pervasive in that philosophy and whether it renders that philosophy useless becomes central. So, first, a historical contextual note. Ever since Linnaeus had advanced the concept of speciation and Buffon had, trying to offer an alternative to Linnaeus, reproduced it, Diderot's Encyclopédie cites Buffon, there was an increasing tendency towards the classification of biological bodies, human ones included, Kant's race theory, along with Blumenbach's, is inscribed in that tradition. Against Herder and Forster, Kant and Blumenbach are in a sense the first to expound a supposedly systematic and scientific notion of race. This reason alone, the historical significance of Kant's race theory should prevent us from dismissing his racism with a shrug. But then, second, as to whether we can still use Kant's philosophy, my answer would be affirmative, and in two senses. The first sense in which we can use Kant's philosophy is by looking at his universalism, cosmopolitanism, and theory of right as powerful tools against domination, as someone like Kleingel has argued. The second sense in which we can use Kant's philosophy concerns the history and limits of racial thinking and racism. When it comes to the first use, Kant's cosmopolitan right, with the presupposition of constitutional republicanism, is not something that, in my view, should be given up. But not giving it up will involve understanding Kant in what Charles Mills has named a race-sensitive way. The resources here, often thin and veiled, may be construed in terms of Kant's conception of the person, of the citizen, or of the moral agent, who is included in each one of these, or in terms of Kant's conception of the Rechtsstaat. A historically inclined reading of Kant will want to acknowledge that the racism in his thinking cannot be simply bracketed away, but that precisely because it cannot, tools for thinking through it, and possibly overcome it, might also be there. And this brings me to the second use of Kant's philosophy when it isn't simply divorced of its racism, that it may show us some of the serious limitations of racial thinking. These limitations, as before, may be construed in terms of insights into self-deception. For example, even when we recognize the personhood of any other human being, we may deceive ourselves into thinking that those persons are unworthy of respect by putting self-interest above the law. Or construed in terms of providing us insight into how biological theories, aesthetic theories, etc. can expound, endorse, or reproduce racial hierarchization. This last point is not just about our old anthropological accounts either, since, to the extent that we deplorably still live in a racist society of Eurocentric racial capitalism, we may want to pay attention to what racist philosophies have to say, if nothing, so that we can try to avoid reproducing their prejudices. Either way, looking at Kant in a race-sensitive way becomes all the more important.
So, as Dr. Gary Bay Peterson explained to us, racist ideas did not just affect Kant as a person, but they also permeated, to a certain extent, his philosophical and anthropological ideas. But despite the fact that Kant had racist elements in his philosophy, a racist-sensitive approach would allow us to critically approach his philosophy, to identify which parts are problematic and isolate them, but also to identify which aspects are not problematic. If we actually focus on Kant's universalism and his cosmopolitanism and his theory of right, we can use these ideas as powerful tools against domination.
I understand that these ideas could be utilized in order to undermine his racism, in order to criticize slavery and colonialism. But migration and asylum policies are slightly different things, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I had asked Dr. Gary Bay Peterson what would Kant say specifically about migration and asylum policies, and this was his response.
We need to keep in mind that against John Locke's conception of land ownership based on the res nullius concept, Kant shifts the emphasis of what entitles us to property from the means of appropriation to the existing socio-historical relations amongst people occupying the land. This is important to understand why Kant thinks migration is a right and why states have an obligation under international law to respect foreigners who arrive in that land for whatever reason. In virtue of the fact that the surface of the earth is finite, that is to say, we share the earth, according to Kant, and in virtue of human beings' capacities to exercise our own freedom, we are bound to have to come up with laws regulating our mutual interactions. At the domestic level of relations within a state, at the international level of relations between states themselves, and at the cosmopolitan level of relations between foreign individuals and states, Kant's commitment to the moral worth of free individuals remains unchanged. While Kant is not committed to forcing states to become the permanent residents of migrants, the right to settle, in his view, would require a contract of equals, he is committed to the dignity understood as the equal moral worth of every human being. In Kant's metaphysics of morals and towards perpetual peace, in relation to migration, this commitment to dignity finds expression in the right of hospitality. Hospitality is the sole cosmopolitan right, and it asserts that states have an obligation not to treat foreigners with hostility, provided that the latter mean no harm against the welcoming state. This is not an unconditional obligation, according to Kant, since it is conditional upon the foreigner bearing no ill intention against the welcoming state, and a state has the right to remove someone, provided, that is, that the removal does not entail their destruction. This obligation may seem fairly minimal, but because it is predicated upon treating that visitor with dignity, it also entails that no migrant may be treated merely as a means and should instead be treated as an end in themselves. That is, what recognizing a migrant's, or anyone else's for that matter, moral worth would mean. When looked at in this way, a more substantive picture emerges. Creating hostile environments by, for example, depriving asylum seekers of urgent, often vital help, using migration merely as an economic tool, and obviously depicting migrants as threats are all direct violations of their moral worth. Creating social conditions that would disfavor or somehow undermine the respect owed to migrants would constitute a direct violation of a state's duty under cosmopolitan right. This obligation, some scholarship has argued, may go so far as to allow for citizens dwelling in a state to defy the rule of law if that law violates the rights of migrants.
So, to recap, Kant held that all states have an obligation to treat all foreigners with dignity, to not to treat them with hostility.
Yeah, well, not just that. He argued in favor of the right of hospitality. But these, however, are not absolute and unconditional rights, but they are contingent upon the condition that those foreigners mean no harm to the state.
It sounds to me that Kant's ideas are the precursor to existing international law. It doesn't sound too different to what the Geneva Convention on Refugees stipulates.
Yeah, and what I do find fascinating is what Dr. Garibay Petersen said, that some Kant scholars argue that Kant would endorse the act of civil disobedience in favor of the rights of refugees. So what Kant, according to these scholars, would say is that citizens have the right to defy the rule of law if that law violates the rights of migrants. But Kant's cosmopolitanism does not go as far as to question the existence of borders and argue in favor of their abolishment. I asked Dr. Garibay Petersen about Kant's ideas on state borders, and this is what he had to say.
Kant invites us to carry out an imaginative exercise. Picture a world order where all citizens have the rights guaranteed by effective republican constitutions in all states, where republican constitution here is understood as a constitutional order arising merely from the concept of right, that is, a constitution based solely on three things: recognition of the freedom of the members of a society, their dependence on common legislation, and their equality. Would we not be entitled to look upon that world order as if it were tending toward an ever more interconnected ideal federation? One, perhaps, that would eventually do away with borders? Not really. While from a specific standpoint we may be entitled to look at the world as if it were tending in that direction, we may only do so with a view as to how we think things should be, but not how they must be. With that qualification, Kant offers an alternative to a borderless world under one world government, a league of republican constituted nations that, having abandoned a lawless condition, enter into a mutual agreement under a common law. But states, with their own spatially confined personhood, cannot will to dissolve themselves. They can only will to attain peace. Then, if peace is not just a momentary cessation of hostilities, but the permanent abandonment of the lawless condition in which states find themselves, states will enter a lawful federation that simultaneously preserves their unity and enhances their stability. In this sense, the cosmopolitan condition does not erase borders, it rather depends on them. And while Kant mentions in passing language and religion, what ultimately determines where state borders lie is the rule of law. This should then invite us to ask the question about the limits of the state structure that Kant envisaged, and moreover, right, go back to my answer to the first question, should invite us to problematize the extent to which Kant's cosmopolitan order is one that in fact includes all of humanity and not just a portion of humanity that appointed itself shepherd of the world.
Okay, that's interesting, but I'm not sure if that's a realistic position.
Well, the future is unwritten, my friend. It's open and unwritten. I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou.
And I am Hambis Damianou.
Thank you for listening to Kant Talk 2.0 and for joining us as we try to answer the question, what would Kant say about migration and state borders? Join us for our next episode titled, Can a Scientist Believe in God?, where we'll explore Kant's approach to religion.